ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wild West Brew Fest in Katy. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
No Blank today. Brian in for Blankers. Jimmy Mack is at the Wild West Brew Fest in Katy. But for some reason, he's been distracted today. Can't imagine why.
Hey, there's Let's go out to the items out here.
I'm sure it's the items. I'm sure it's the items that's distracting you. Let's go out to the HR&P guest line, being joined by Chancellor Johnson, writing for Cron.com right now. You can follow him on Twitter at ChancellorTV. He's been following the Houston Cougars around all season long. Chancellor, thanks for taking a few minutes hanging out with us on this Friday afternoon. What did you think of the first two games for Houston out in Wichita, beating SIUE and then Gonzaga in the second round? How did you think they fared in those first two games?
Hey, man, first off, thanks for having me on. As far as the Houston Cougars go, in their first weekend, I thought overall they played pretty well, right? Of course, the SIUE game, they did what they were supposed to do as the number one seed. There was no March Madness or March Magic there from SIUE. And Houston, they dominated defensively, and you saw the guys make shots, and they coasted to that victory. And then against Gonzaga, a team that a lot of people, at least nationally, thought had a real shot against Houston. Houston controlled that game all the way throughout, up until the last couple of minutes where they struggled. They acted like they had never seen a press before in their life. And a guy in Miles Juzan, who overall has had a really good second half of this season, yeah, he made a few mistakes, and they put them in a position to potentially lose that game. But ultimately, thanks to LJ Cryer, him scoring 30, Juwan Roberts coming out with a big time second half, they were able to advance and move on to this their sixth straight Sweet 16.
Chancellor, I wanted to ask you about a name you just mentioned there. It feels appropriate since we're out here in Katy, where LJ Cryer played high school basketball. But I was reading your story that you have up on your timeline. You can find it on Twitter, and it's also obviously up on Cron.com. But I love the part about LJ Cryer's work ethic and something I didn't know about him, but going back to his high school days here in Katy, where he apparently would skip lunch and get up 500 shots during lunch. I mean, the work ethic and determination is unbelievable, and obviously has to lead to the trust that Kelvin Sampson has in him. And I was also, I like the part about, you know, Kelvin has, you know, shot restrictions for a lot of his guys, but not for LJ Cryer. Mm-hmm. Just talk about the confidence he seems to give off to everyone around him.
Yeah, absolutely. LJ Cryer is not just one of the best shooters in the country. He's one of the best flat-out scorers. And really, it's how do you want it. When you talk about LJ Cryer, it definitely starts from beyond the three-point line, as he's one of the most accurate snipers in the country. But he can really get to the rack. He can stop in mid-range and knock down shots. And Kelvin has had a history of just guards who can simply fill it up, from Dejon Drew to Marcus Sasser, and then now with LJ Cryer. And so, yeah, it definitely starts with his work ethic, because here's a guy who maybe like 5'10". He's not super athletic, so he's not just blowing by guys with super speed or quickness, and he's certainly not jumping over anybody, but he just knows how to get to his spot. And talking to him, he said that, you know, I asked him what makes him different than maybe some of the other shooters, right? Because if you take a look at anybody at the D1 level, everybody works hard. Everybody gets to a bunch of shots. So what separates him? And he just said he just tried to outwork everybody, and that started in high school when his peers were at lunch getting food, he was filling it up, you know, with people you call the gun, and getting up as many shots as he can and working on his game. And so, yeah, it translates, you know, during his time at Baylor, where he was able to get legitimate minutes on a national championship team. And then it's turned into him being, as I mentioned, one of the best, not just shooters, but scorers in the country, and earning that green light from Kelvin Sampson to just simply go out there and play, as long as you do everything else on the other parts of the basketball, as far as rebounding and defend. But yeah, that's what makes LJ Cryer so special as a player.
Chancellor Johnson joining us on the HR&P guest line. What else impresses you about this Cougar team? It's been a historic run to this point, 32 wins, 19 wins in the Big 12, first time it's ever happened. Might be the last time it ever happened, with the conference shrinking back down to 18 games. What makes this team special?
Yeah, to me, one thing that sticks out is their ability to beat you in so many different ways, right? Like, we talk about how you know, they're known as a defensive and a rebounding team. But it's also important to note that, and this definitely starts with LJ Cryer, they're also one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country as well. They're shooting as a team 38%, which was fourth best in the entire country. So in addition to L.J. Crier, you also have Emmanuel Sharp, you also have Miles Yuzan, and then off the bench, Malik Wilson is also shooting around 38%. The other three, their wings on the perimeter are all shooting 42% from deep. Houston has never had that happen, at least over this past decade. So they're one of the best shooting teams in the country, and then you know what you're going to get from them defensively, right? They're really going to heat you up on the perimeter as far as guarding you, and they're going to trap you on ball screens and really kind of speed you up and force a lot of turnovers. So offensively, they can just beat you from bombing you from deep. Defensively, they're going to get a bunch of stops. And then, which we saw a great example of that, of how they'll beat you on the boards, was against Kansas. They didn't shoot the ball particularly well, but their best offense was rebounding the basketball on the offensive end and getting second-chance points. And so, especially against March Madness, there's going to be nights where things might not go your way and the ball doesn't drop. So how else are you finding ways to win? And Houston has done that consistently all year long, particularly on the road where they didn't lose in the Big 12 whatsoever. And that's the type of atmosphere they're going to get tonight out there in Indianapolis, less than 100 miles away from the campus of Purdue.
Chancellor, I'm curious. You're obviously talking about the offensive side there, but the Cougars have been famous for stifling defense ever since Kelvin Sampson arrived on campus. And someone who's not a starter, but I mean, or at least doesn't get starters minutes all the time, but someone I think deserves a lot of credit for their defensive prowess has been JoJo Tugler. I mean, the guy feels like he has arms that go down to the floor. The arm span is crazy, the way he can get into passing lanes. A little bit of an unsung hero, because people obviously talk about Crier, they talk about Juwan Roberts, Emmanuel Sharp, but how much credit should be JoJo Tugler be getting for this run?
You know what's funny? Earlier this week, so this was Tuesday, right before they took off to Indianapolis, we were talking to some of JoJo's teammates about him, and I believe it was Juwan Roberts, Emmanuel Sharp, that believes that he's one of their most talented players on their team. And as you mentioned, he doesn't always get the credit, but he does so much of their dirty work, and he's one of their main glue guys, and particularly on the defensive end, right? So he just won the Conference Player of the Year as a sophomore. And when you look at the Big 12, look at the type of athletes that they have. And there's a lot of teams within this conference that play really great defense. There's a lot of really good individual defenders, but the coaches around the league felt that he was the best, and once again, doing it in only his second year. And he's the guy who was missing last year for the Cougs. He injured his foot and missed all of March Madness. So this is his first run, and we've seen what he's been able to do. And one thing that's impressed me, especially on the defensive end, is his improvement offensively as well, where they're giving him touches on the block and letting him go to work. And so we've been seeing more and more possessions of that. And so, yeah, you're talking about a guy who, when we look at on this U of H roster, right now he's probably their best NBA prospect. Maybe not just for this, not for this upcoming year, but in a couple years from now, a guy who can defend really, multiple positions with his athleticism and his size. That's a guy that has scouts talking, and he's not coming out this year, but maybe next year or definitely by his senior year, he's a guy that we could see playing in the NBA really soon.
Chancellor, you alluded to the matchup a bit. Houston-Purdue, of course, Tennessee-Kentucky will play first, but in Lucas Oil, less than 100 miles away from Purdue's campus, certainly will be a heavy Purdue crowd. What about the matchup? You know, Juwan Roberts, JoJo Tugler in the paint. You look at Purdue, led by Braden Smith, the All-American point guard, but also Trey Kaufman-Wren kind of gets, I think he's the most underrated player in the country. He averages nearly 20.5 points a game. What do you think about the matchup tonight?
Yes, certainly it will be a tough challenge for the Houston Cougars going into, as I mentioned, a kind of a rowdy and rogue environment in their Sweet 16 matchup. But I will say, I think they match up better with Purdue than they actually did last week versus Gonzaga, and we saw what they were able to do against the Bulldogs. But as you mentioned, this is a very talented Boilermakers team led by Matt Painter, who's led them to a number of tournament runs over the years. He's one of the better coaches, not just in the Big Ten, but really in the nation. And as you mentioned, Braden Smith was the Big Ten Player of the Year, and he's obviously a really good player. But Trey Kaufman-Wren, 20 points a game and nearly 7 rebounds. He's a guy who's really dangerous for the Boilermakers and a guy who can really beat you. So it's going to be a tall challenge for Houston, as I mentioned. But they're favorites in this game for a reason. I'm really interested to see how the Boilermakers respond to some of that physicality that U of H has shown throughout, not just this season, but over the years, and how will they adjust to that. And yeah, if we, you know, we get another type of performance we saw from L.J. Crier mixed in with a better showing from Milos Yuzan as well, who, as I mentioned, the first couple of, in the Big 12 tournament, he was big. Down the stretch, the second half of the season, he was big, but he's really been quiet in these first couple of games. This is his first time in March Madness, but I think he can be a guy who can really help the Cougs tonight.
Chancellor, Jeremy mentioned the possible home court advantage for Purdue being so close to their campus. Something else that comes up from time to time, it was on one of our earlier shows, Jeremy and I briefly discussed it, but the conversation that seems to be had sometimes about shooting when it comes to these games that get moved from traditional basketball arenas into NFL stadiums, has this been something that's on anyone's mind? How much of a factor do you think that could be?
We actually asked the players about that, L.J. Crier, Emmanuel Sharp, Yuzan, you know, all their main shooters on the team. And each one of them said they didn't believe that would be a problem. L.J. Crier certainly has been here before, all right? Even going back to the days at Baylor when he went to the Final Four and won a championship in Phoenix, in that Glendale stadium where the Cardinals play. So he's been there. Milos Yuzan, this is his first time in March Madness, so he doesn't really know what to expect. But just from shooter to shooter, even whether it was Sharp or L.J. Crier, they all mentioned that, listen, you get there, and once you kind of get a feel of it, usually through shoot around or through practice, anything outside of that is really you're just playing basketball, so there's nothing to worry about. But we have seen impact teams in the past with Houston, from how close it is to playing in Purdue to the potential depth issue. They're not making excuses on either one of those.
Chancellor, appreciate the time. Good stuff as always, and look forward to catching up with you soon. Enjoy the games tonight.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me.
Chancellor Johnson. You can see his work, cron.com. He's been following the Cougars all year long. Film breaks downs on his Twitter as well. He does a great job covering the Cougars. You can follow him on Twitter at Chancellor TV. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's talk about the games from yesterday. The four Sweet 16 games from a night ago. Texas Tech into the Elite Eight. Duke into the Elite Eight. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Those teams are going to the Elite Eight. You should be going to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. It's a fantastic time. I'm working getting on out there over the after the basketball season's over. I might even try to do a few shows up there at Two Creeks Crossing Resort. Let the boys stay at Gal. I'll go lounge back in one of the cabins and do the show in the peace and comfort of Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. We're running the traps. We're figuring it out. But if you're looking to escape the rat race for the weekend, the hustle and bustle of the job, traffic, your coworker, whatever's calling you causing you stress, you want to get rid of it. Get out of that. I get it. We all get it. The place to do it is Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Escape the stress. Escape the anxiety. And enjoy the peace and comfort of the relaxing great outdoors. Book your stay at twocreekscrossingresort.com right now. From open green spaces to beautiful, majestic trees or the wildlife out there at Two Creeks Crossing Resort, you're going to love your time there. If you like to fish, well, how about you drop the line in the water? They have some of the best fishing in Texas. Can't beat that. Oh, it's just the best of times. Just 90 minutes from Houston, too. You can escape the city without traveling too far at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Less than an hour and a half from the city. You don't have to waste all your PTO time or your weekend time driving or flying to your destination. It's an hour and a half away. You're there like that. Hike on their 92-acre property, maybe play some pickleball on their pickleball courts, kayaking, or you can just hang out by the pool with a drink. Don't hate you for it. Two Creeks Crossing Resort loves to take care of their visitors. They'll have a barbecue cook-off one week and crawfish boil the next. They're always looking for things to take care of you, and you're always going to have a great time at Two Creeks Crossing. From tree houses to cabins, glamping, pull up the RV. They have the perfect stay for anyone. Book your weekend escape right now at twocreekscrossingresort.com. That's twocreekscrossingresort.com.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Anderson sets. Williams to tie at three. Yeah! Knox will pick him up. Williams corkscrews up, off, and down! Yep. Try driving on Hawkins, firing off. Texas Tech has won.
Texas Tech with the biggest comeback in the history of the Sweet 16. Winning in
That's
overtime over Arkansas,
yeah.
85-83. Thank you, Brian. What a win for the Red Raiders. Darion Williams, clutch, man. That Darion Williams, he is clutch. He hit the game-tying three against Houston in the game that they won inside the Fertitta Center that sent it to OT. Very similar to what he did yesterday. Big last 10 minutes of the second half and then the overtime frame. Huge win for Texas Tech. Good come-from-behind victory. I always like it when the Big 12 beats the SEC, so I was rooting for the conference brethren yesterday in that victory, but that was really cool to see the Red Raiders come from behind and punch their tickets to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I mean, easily the best game of the four last night. The first couple games, especially with Alabama hitting every three imaginable, and Duke, and specifically Cooper Flagg having their way. This was easily the best game of the night, but it was really cool to see there from Williams, because he had, like you mentioned, like the second half, it obviously started to turn it on. I can't remember what the timestamp of the game was, but there was a moment where it seemed like Arkansas was taunting him. They were doing the tapping on the head, like got dunked on.
Yeah,
from that moment on. Yeah, and from that moment
on,
he just turned it on, because he was pretty cold before that. And he jacked up that shot to tie the game. Now, he was
That's kind of mean. That has some negative connotation. Jacked it up. He wasn't like a heave. Like, he had a good look, stepped into it, jacked it up.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll change the verbiage. When he put up the shot to tie the game, I mean, I did not think that was going in when he let it go. I mean, he certainly was open, but the defender, who probably should have been up a little bit closer, gave him just enough room to get off the shot, and he obviously buried it. But incredible game, incredible effort by Williams in that comeback.
The Coach Calipari, he's getting grief for two things. He's getting grief for not fouling before Darion Williams hit the three. And he's also getting grief for not calling a timeout on the final possession where they missed a chance to tie it in the OT frame. I don't think Cal got either one of these wrong. I don't mind that Cal didn't foul, and I didn't mind that he didn't take a timeout. I guess we can look at these one by one. The first one, at the one where Darion Williams hit the three and Calipari did not foul, he took that shot with like 11 seconds to go. Like, you're fouling at the 11-second mark and turning it into a free throw contest? That's not something I'm interested in doing. So I didn't think that he got that one wrong. I would not have fouled with that much time left on the clock either.
Yeah, I guess the conversation becomes like, what part, you know, how much left on the clock before you do start to do that? Because
like
I can
5 seconds.
That. Okay, so for you it's 5 seconds. Yeah, I wouldn't have killed Cal if he had fouled there. If he has free throw, I don't know the entire free throw percentage of the Arkansas roster, but if he has enough free throw shooters there that he trusts, I wouldn't kill him for it. But certainly with 11 seconds left, that's not exactly when I would automatically say you have to foul. That's the only move you can make. But I would support that more than the idea of taking the timeout on the other side, because I like to be able to come up without the defense having the chance to set up.
Same. Like, I work on that before we play a game. Like, we have a situation, final possession, clock running out. We need either a shot to win it, a shot to tie it. I want to just bring it up the floor without taking the timeout. I don't want the defense to set up, and maybe even personnel changes. Like, they give them an opportunity to put the best defenders on the floor for your opponent. So I'm a fan of not taking a timeout there, but I will say this. The moment you see any hesitation, the moment that the play's not going downhill, the moment that it is not how you worked on this prior to the game and, like, probably all year long, that's where I would like to see the timeout taken.
Sure.
Now, I don't think that happened, though. Like, I don't think that happened in yesterday's game. Like, I never saw hesitation. I never saw confusion. I never saw any sort of that thing. So I don't blame Cal for not taking the time out there before DJ Wagner missed that shot.
Yeah, like you said, Wagner, I mean, Wagner had, I don't know exactly how far away from the basket he was, but I mean, I just credit Hawkins for good defense on that play. He was in his pocket the whole time. I wouldn't say it was an incredibly difficult shot, but it's not like one of those last second things where you see a guy gets just completely discombobulated and has to throw up a fadeaway three-pointer. He was driving towards the hoop, had a shot within, you know, 10 feet. I don't think it was the worst, you know, possession they could have had. Just give credit to to Hawkins for being a good defender there.
Yeah. Texters, Corey, fun game to watch as a fan of Tech, but they won't be able to do that against Florida. They really need McMillan for his three-point shot. It was a weird game. Like, Tech didn't hit their threes like they normally do. The point guard Hawkins didn't hit any of his shots. Like, he didn't. His final field goal of the game, I think, came in overtime. Like, I think it was in overtime. He only made one shot in the entire game.
I think it was three. Well, maybe it was his only field goal as well, but I know for sure when he made that three in overtime, they said it was his first three made of the game.
He was one for 10 in the game, one for 7. Yes.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, and that's not like him. So I agree, Corey. Like, the McMillan thing's weird because McCaslin was, like, talking in the buildup, like, hey, he's getting closer. And then there was video of him practicing, like, in the public practice thing. So I don't know if it's, like, mind games or if he actually is getting closer. But it is disappointing that they don't have McMillan on the floor because they're a better team with him on the floor. I'm a big fan of his game. Texter, Grant McCaslin was trying to call a timeout on that last possession, and the refs didn't give it to him. Work for us, wreck him. I didn't see that. That's interesting. That would have stunk if Arkansas tied or won the game. I would be ticked off as a Tech fan that the referees didn't see that. I missed that one, but that's interesting. The other games, Duke-Arizona got close at the end. My takeaway on this is this Duke team might be the most talented college basketball team in recent memory. Like, they have three lotto picks. They have another freshman sharpshooter. They have Tyrese Proctor, who's still, you know, a veteran, really good college player. They got the transfer Sion James for Tulane, who is a really good college player. And Cooper Flagg is unbelievably good. This Duke team is talented.
Like, I mean, I haven't watched every single Duke game this year, but it's hard to imagine that Cooper Flagg has had a better game this year. I mean, obviously the scoring was there, and it felt like there were times where he really took on the challenge of no one on this team could guard me, and they really couldn't. But it was so much more than that. He had, well, I think, three blocks. He was rebounding well. He was leading the break a few times, getting assist on some of the lobs to his teammates. And you mentioned the shooting they have on top of that with the other freshmen and Proctor as well, who were just shooting crazy through the first two games Duke had, and still shot well yesterday as well. But well, 1 of 4 from three. But overall, Proctor's been a great shooter this season and in this postseason. But they were my pick to win the national title before the tournament started, which, you know, is a little bit of a bummer because I would like to see Houston win it. But they certainly look like the most complete team in the tournament right now.
Cooper Flagg is tough to defend because he has the athleticism where if you guard him with a big, he's probably going to out-athlete the big or beat you from the perimeter. And then if you try to mark him with a guard, well, then he has a huge size advantage. And he's got great feel. Like, he's very smart and savvy and kind of cunning on the offensive end. Like, there was one play where he's running down the baseline trying to get to the opposite block, and then he kind of feels that his defender is sagged off of him and just slams on the brakes, has deep post position right underneath the basket. He's really, really good. There was some controversy in that game, though. I don't know if you saw this. The flagrant foul call and the non-flagrant foul call.
Yes. I completely disagreed with what they called on the floor.
My contention was that how are you not consistent? Like, there was a player early in the game wherever an Arizona player hooked and held a Duke player, dragged him to the ground. Letter of the law, it probably is a flagrant two because the hook and hold is something that was a point of emphasis a couple of years ago that they do. Like, they're pretty strict on that in college basketball. Is it over-refereeing? Overbearing? Probably. But Arizona gets called for it. And then about 3 minutes later, top of the key, very similar play. Almost identical play. They go to the monitor. Gene Steratore is like, yep, that's a flagrant two. There's no doubt about it. That's a flagrant two. No flagrant two. So for Arizona, it was a flagrant two. For Duke, it wasn't a flagrant two. And it's like, what's going on here? Why wasn't that one a flagrant two? So that was a bit frustrating. Love was unbelievable. Like, he just hates Duke.
Oh, yeah. Caleb Love was so good. He was almost – without him, obviously, they don't even make it the 7-point game it became. He was unbelievable. But I agree with you on the hook and drag down, the no call, or the call that they made against Arizona underneath the basket versus the one they made towards the top of the key. I mean, in both cases, I did think the one that Arizona did get the flagrant for was the more egregious of the two because he never released and dragged the Duke player all the way to the ground. And on the other side of that, the Duke player did technically, as the
I don't think so.
Well, he let go at the – hold on. Stay with me for a second. He let go at the very, very end. But my point is, in saying that both should have been called, is because I don't think when he let go was early enough to not get the call. Like, he technically did let go as they hit the ground, but he held on to him long enough to drag him to the ground, to the court. So, I mean, he clearly hooked, held, and pulled down to the ground, even if he did let go at the very, very end. To me, both of them should have been the exact same call.
Yeah, 75, the flagrant fouls are stupid, didn't exist in 90s NBA. I don't personally like them. I just, the inconsistency of the call.
Right?
Yeah, like it's overemphasized. And I think somebody has gotten hurt in the past on that type of play.
I think it was
a Purdue player. Like, I think he separated his shoulder. So, like, it was put in because of that, basically. But the lack of consistency on that play was very, very weird to me. Alabama gets by BYU 113-88. Alabama had 25 threes in this game, which was an NCAA tournament record. BYU was like, hey, the BYU dared them to beat them from three, and Alabama beat them from three. They scored 113 points. They scored 62 points in the second half.
Did you ever think Mark Sears was going to miss when he put up a shot? I mean, it was crazy. It wasn't even just him. I mean, Youngblood was 5 of 11. Holloway was 6 from 13 from 3. It was unbelievable. I mean, and I give credit to BYU. It was a 10-point game or more for most of the, you know, it towards the end of the first half, and then obviously Alabama really added on towards the end. But they seemed to stick with it pretty well for a while. Problem was, they were, I mean, not to oversimplify it, but they were just trading twos with threes. Like, they were, with their action and screens and the pick and rolls, they were getting into the paint and getting good shots. But, you know, Richie Saunders was playing well. They got, I thought, a lot of good shots and were semi-keeping up. But even though they were making a high percentage, their shots were twos and Alabama's were threes, and math adds up at the end.
That game went exactly like I thought it was going to go. Like, it went to a T. Like, it was very NBA-like between those two teams. And that's how they want to play. They want to play fast.
It was a crazy pace. It was a crazy pace. Yeah.
They both want to play that way. And whenever you have two teams that want to play that way, you're going to get up a lot of shots. And they got up a lot of shots. Florida ends the Crab 5 season 87-71. The drama here is their coach. Like, do you see that Willard was being booed as he walked to the team bus?
No.
Like, that's the controversy.
I mean, I know why he'd be
that
booed, but I didn't see it. No, I didn't see it.
He was being booed as he walked to the bus. You know how they do, like, the, you know, the little rally, like the farewell.
Yeah.
The team goes
like
to the arena.
Walk through the aisle or whatever.
Yeah, usually the hotel lobby or something like that. Yeah, right. he got booed by the Maryland fans as he went to the bus. It's awkward. Like, one of Maryland's biggest games in program history in recent memory, and their head coach is being booed as he goes to the bus.
They haven't had a lot of postseason success since, obviously, Lute Olson left. I mean, obviously.
No. Lute Olson was Arizona. You're thinking Gary Williams.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Gary Williams. They won national titles around the same time, or in the early 2000s. But, yeah, not a lot of postseason success since Gary Williams left. But, I mean, I get it. I mean, he's leaving them. And, I mean, he's had some comments talking about – now, he probably is right about, you know, the investment made in Maryland and the reason why he leaves and goes to Villanova. But I could see how, you know, especially when that conversation is open during the tournament, I could see how that would turn off fans to the point of booing them.
Did you hear the Jeff Goodman rumor? Jeff Goodman earlier, like right before we went on the air, he said that if and when Kevin Willard leaves Maryland, that Buzz Williams would have interest in the job. Here's the tweet. Jeff Goodman tweeted this 3 hours ago. Texas A&M's Buzz Williams is trying to get involved in Maryland if when it opens. Sources told the Field of 68.
Is that a better job than A&M?
I don't think so. I personally don't think so. I mean, A&M's in the SEC, the top conference in college basketball. They have tons of money and resources. A&M's actually had equal, if not better, tournament success in the last 10, 15 years. Maryland's in the Big Ten, which is a good conference, obviously. But you have a coach that's leaving because he doesn't know who his boss is and he doesn't love the resources there. I don't think it's good. Maybe this is Buzz trying to, you know, hold A&M over the barrel and get leverage for a new deal.
Oh, is
but
he
if he left
Jimbo?
Maybe. If he left College Station for College Park, I think it would be a very bad idea.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what the motivation there would be. The only thing that I could come up off the top of my head quickly is the whole idea of football school versus basketball school. But like you mentioned, their current coach is leaving because of the investment and the people leading the charge, up above them. So that doesn't seem like that would be a point in Maryland's favor. The only thing I could think of, and it was cryptic because John didn't explain at all. But you remember that clip we played in Who Said It like a week or two ago, where Granato seemed to claim that he had sources saying that A&M, I guess the people high up at A&M don't like Buzz Williams. Maybe that has a bigger factor than we currently know.
Yeah,
that's a wild speculation. That's a wild speculation, but I mean I know Granato talks to people who
might tell him
some things. Yeah, exactly. So I mean, maybe there's something to the fact that Buzz Williams isn't liked amongst the brass there at A&M.
Yeah, maybe he reads the writing on the wall. His roster too. Don't they like all leave? Like he hasn't really left them in a great spot if he is leaving, because like all of his best players are gone.
Yeah, Wade Taylor's
out of eligibility.
Like a ninth year senior at this point, so he's gone.
Yeah. When Granato speaks, though, you listen. Texter, remember Leitner was the same. You do get some Leitner vibes with Cooper Flagg for sure. Opposing teams just need to pull a Branham and go for Flagg's ankle. You said it, not me. Not disagreeing. You forgot the Boozer Twins coming next year. I forgot it. I did forget about that. I was talking about this year's team, but yeah, Duke's Shire's doing a great job there. Like, don't replace the shoes of a legend, right? Shire's been really good there. I hate to say it because I don't like Duke, but he has done really good. He's done really good. It's been seamless replacing one of the all-time great coaches, and that almost never happened. So you do have to tip your cap and give him some credit there. All right, 713-780-ESPN. You want to talk some college hoops? We will. We'll talk some pro hoops, too. Rockets going to Salt Lake. Come away with a victory. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The Astros have potentially three moves that are very, very bold. It takes huge cojones. Altuve, Trey Tucker, potentially Cam Smith. If the Astros win the division after doing all of those things, they're going to look really good. Dana Brown and his front office is going to look very good.
You are back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wild West Brew Fest in Katy.
That's right. Wild West Brew Fest in Katy. Launch party tonight from 7 to 10. Silent auction at 8. It's at Typhoon, Texas. The Wild West Brew Fest tomorrow. Tickets available at wildwestbrewfest.com. You can also pre-purchase drink tickets. There's going to be over 80 breweries, more than 800 beers, and live music. So get your cold beer going on at the Wild West Brew Fest tomorrow. But the launch party tonight. Brian out there now, being distracted, apparently. Lots of things going on for him.
Lots of distractions, yep.
Rockets beat the Jazz yesterday, 121-110. You know, here the Rockets just keep – and they're taking advantage of a soft part of their schedule, but that's what you should do. That's what good teams do. That's what teams that finish second place in the Western Conference do. They're just humming along. Like, it's always been, well, are they going to be a team that finishes in the top 10 at the start of the year? Okay, a hot start. Can they hang on to this top 6 spot? They just very well just might be the 2 seed in the Western Conference, Brian.
I think they will. I really do think they will. I mean, they won 11 out of 12, you mentioned, during that soft part of the schedule. And you look at kind of where they stand now in the Western Conference. Obviously, OKC's way out in first. But they've given themselves, you know, a little bit of a cushion here. Obviously, top 6, like the real playoffs, is a lock at this point. They're 6 up on the Clippers and with 8 games to go. I mean, that's a wrap. They're not going to obviously fall below that. But then you look at the Lakers and the Grizz. They're now 3.5 up on both of those teams. They have the tiebreaker over the Grizz, I know for sure. Not sure about the Lakers. I know they have a game remaining against the Lakers. But that's a pretty good cushion, 3.5 with 8 to go. A little bit tighter with the Nuggets, and there's still a game remaining there against Denver as well. But I think they're going to hold on to the 2 seed. I think the Rockets are going to obviously surpass all of our expectations. I think you and I were a little more optimistic about them this year than Joel was, but certainly surpassing even our more grandiose expectations.
Yeah, if they finish second in the Western Conference, it's an unbelievably successful regular season.
Ime's got to be top three coach of the year if they finish second in the West.
Yeah, I would have him in my top three. No doubt about that. Now, what they do in the playoffs is probably how people are going to define their season, which probably is unfair. Now, they need to show a pulse, right? Like, they just can't be swept in the first round against whoever right. makes it out of the play. And if they do indeed finish second, like, I'd like them to win a series if you have the 2 seed in the Western Conference. But it's been a phenomenal year. Like, to me, it's house's money the rest of the way. I think this team's just really talented. Like, how are the Rockets the second-best team in the West? Well, they're well-coached, and they have lots of skill. Like, Jalen Green, sorry, guys, is a good player. Amen Thompson, sorry guys, is a good player. Alpi Shingun is a good player. And then you surround those guys with good vets. Like Fred VanVleet is a capable starting point guard in the NBA. Dylan Brooks is a fantastic 3-and-D guy. Way better shooter than people thought the Rockets were getting. They have depth. Tari Eason, Jabari Smith. Like, they're a good team. They have talent. They're deep. Like, it's not a fluke. I don't think that you can win 50 games in the NBA and be a fluke. So I love the direction the Rockets are headed. Now, yesterday's game specifically, I think that the biggest storyline was that Craig Ackerman didn't know what outerwear was. He thought that everything that wasn't underwear was outerwear. It's like, hey, Craig, didn't you grow up like up in the north? Like, it's jackets and, you know, things where you're cold or whatever. Yeah, he thought that anything that was not underwear was outerwear.
I missed that part.
Vanessa was giving him all sorts of grief. Hollins was giving him grief. Yeah, Ackerman had no clue what outerwear was, which was funny. And now the Jazz did make this a game in the fourth quarter. They cut it to 4 about halfway through. They cut it to 3 with 3.5 to play. Did you notice that Jalen Green was playing point guard down the stretch? Fred VanVleet was on the bench, and Jalen Green, point guard for the Houston Rockets, was the closer at the point guard position yesterday for the Rockets, which I think we're looking at our future point guard. You know, that Fred VanVleet option, maybe you pick that up and you package it for a Kevin Durant. You just slide Jalen Green over to the one. I think it's becoming more realistic by the day.
Yeah, I think I'm getting closer and closer to your side of that argument. I was definitely skeptical about it at first, and obviously I've had more doubt about Jalen Green and his consistency than you. Joel and I had kind of been aligned on that, but last night I thought was a pretty – I mean, now you have to take grain of salt. They're playing the Jazz, obviously one of the worst teams in the league. But I thought last night was a great step for Jalen Green because, like you said, Fred VanVleet gets benched. I mean, he was just awful from – shooting. I mean, 1 of 10 from the floor, 1 of 7 from three. And I think maybe the one of the breaking points had to be when I can't remember who knocked the ball loose, but he got a steal, brought the ball up, and just immediately jacked up a three in transition. Missed it badly. Luckily, Shingun bailed him out with the putback. But I mean, after that, yeah, Jalen Green was running point. They were running the 2-man game, the pick and roll with Shingun, and that was really effective for them. So that's definitely something I think more open to than I was, you know, just a couple weeks ago.
That's the thing. Like, he wasn't playing point guard just to, like, be the guy bringing it up and then taking all the shots. Like, they were putting him in the pick and roll with Alpi and some nice pocket passes that got Alpi in some space. Alpi, I thought, was really good yesterday. He still frustrates me at times whenever he makes superstar. He tries to make, like, these home run plays. Remember a couple of weeks ago he had, like, that no-look pass that ended in a dunk, and everybody's like, yay! I was like, no! I don't like seeing that.
Wait, because he's just going to encourage them?
Yes, because he's going to do it more often, and they're going to lead to turnovers. He had, like, 3 plays like that yesterday where he's looking for this home run highlight reel pass, and he just throws it away. Like, it's disgusting. Right. I hate it. Stop doing it. Just make a simple play, Alpi. But he's very skilled. I thought he played about as good as he's played in a while yesterday. Obviously, he scored a ton of points, 33-10 for Alpi yesterday. This Jalen Green finger thing is weird to me. I haven't seen people talk about this. Have I just missed this? But about 2 or 3 times every time I watch the Rockets, Jalen Green's messing with his knuckle on his left hand. And he has a tape, too. And I haven't seen anybody like report about this or talk about this. But
yeah,
I love that he's
that show up
banged
or...
up.
I haven't shown that shown up. Or I haven't seen that on an injury report, so I don't know really what's going on.
But he's messing with it every game. So, like, he's playing through something. Maybe it's just a busted knuckle. I mean, obviously he's not missing games, but I don't love seeing that. King of Twitch Rockets remind me.
It hasn't really seemed to affect his play.
It hasn't, no. He played well yesterday. Rockets remind me of the 16 Astros. I mean, 16 Astros missed the playoffs, though. Like, would it be more 15 Astros?
Yeah, like this, we never really got to it, but that was a conversation I had on a rundown a few weeks ago. Like, where on the Astros timeline were the Rockets? And at the time, I thought it was 15, and I think I would still lean towards that. A team that people were optimistic about could see that they're, you know, close to taking a step, and it thought they would take a step, but wasn't ready to really contend. and maybe the second seed says they're closer to contending than I previously give them credit for. But, yeah, if I were to put them on the Astros timeline, I would say this is more 2015 than 2016.
I just hope that next year isn't 2016.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I can't, and I can't see that happening. Like, I can't envision a scenario in which the Rockets either finish second or third in the Western Conference and have north of 50 wins, and then next year with all the talent that they have and move, and, like, you know, options to make moves, that they regress to being a non-playoff team. Like, I just do not envision that. Like, I think the floor next year for the Rockets is 50 wins.
I agree. And, like, that's kind of where that conversation that I had in mind falls apart because of that weird 2016 years where the Astros didn't make the playoffs. Because I agree with you. Like, it would take, you know, as deep as the Rockets are, it would probably take multiple injuries for them to not even make the play-in, like, the play-in part of the bracket. Like, I can't see them. Obviously, the NBA bracket, much deeper, more teams get in than in Major League Baseball, especially in 2016 before they added the extra playoff team. So the comparison's not perfect, but I would still say this team's probably, because they're not 2017 yet, I don't think they're going to win a title. OKC is clearly far superior. I would say Boston and Cleveland are as well. But I would probably, on the timeline, put them at 15.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. You have some Rocket thoughts. We'll get on in here. 713-780-3776. Also on the other side, Cam Smith is the most exciting Astros rookie since? You tell us. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Being a homeowner comes with great responsibility. It also comes with great cost. Ownwheel's here to help you with both of those things. Let them take a little bit of anxiety away from you, but also save you some money. That sounds good, doesn't it? A lot of homeowners are overpaying on property taxes, and it shouldn't be you. Head to ownwheel.com. Sign up in less than 3 minutes. Their sign-up process is so easy, so quick, less than 3 minutes, and just like that, they're experts fighting for you. Their cutting-edge technology can start saving you money. And the best part, no upfront cost. You're not paying anything at sign-up. You're not paying anything until they potentially save you money. And then with that savings, put your property tax back into your pocket. Reinvest it. Take the family on vacation. Maybe the spouse to a nice dinner. However you want to spend it. Ownwell handles it all from start to finish. Delivers top results. No upfront cost. You're only going to pay if you save money. There is no risk. All reward. You can't beat it. Ownwell levels the playing field, eliminates the concern of paying too much on property tax for the everyday home and property owner like you and me. Deadline to protest May 15th. Do not run out of time. Save money on your property taxes with Ownwell. Sign up in less than 3 minutes. It's quick to do. Start your protest today at ownwell.com. That's ownwell.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. The Killer Bees are broadcasting live from inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Wild West Brewfest in Katy. Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Typhoon Texas and Katy, Wild West Brewfest tomorrow. You get your tickets now, wildwestbrewfest.com. You can purchase drink tickets in advance. 80 breweries, more than 500 beers, and live music. Launch party tonight from 7 to 10, silent auction beginning at 8 o'clock. 713-780-ESPN. Cam Smith, who had a hit yesterday. Cam Smith, big base hit to right field. Defense, did you notice the play where it was a kind of a deep fly ball to center? Like, routine play, but kind of in deep center field. And Jake Myers drifted back. You know, routine play, can of corn. Cam Smith sprinted all the way from right field to back up a routine pop fly in deep center field at the dike. He's not doing that in 2 weeks.
No, I would hope not. I think, because obviously I'm running the board during that game yesterday, so my attention was a little bit divided. But I think I looked up right as Jake was, like, patting him on the back after the play. So I sort of noticed what was going on. I didn't get the full detail, but that is a kind of a funny moment.
I tweeted out the video of it at Jeremy Branham. I don't know why you don't have my tweets on, you know, notification.
You just throw this crap out here to get clicks.
I don't know why you don't have notifications whenever I tweet. I am one of your hosts. You should know what's important to me.
I only have it for journalists, so, you know, you didn't quite make the list.
That's fine. I'm not a journalist. I openly admit that. Yeah, but he backed up his fly ball to deep center field. It was probably 380 feet away. Routine play, deep center field. Cam Smith is on a full sprint. Doesn't even get there in time. He was a step away from being on the warning track, just to the right of the 409 sign. Like, that's how far he went to back up this play. So, like, he's excited. He has a bunch of energy. He's thrilled to be
silver
there.
Silver lining, he's got range.
Like, Jose Altuve is not even thinking about doing that, which he shouldn't. Like, no one's doing that.
Well, I don't
know.
I mean, he did almost truck Jake Myers. So.
That was to catch a pop fly, though. Like, that was to catch fly ball. Like, there is not a single right fielder or left fielder in baseball that is running to the 390 feet to straightaway center to back up a routine fly ball. Nobody, no corner outfielder is doing that except for Cam Smith. And I don't think Cam Smith's doing it in a week. I think he's going to be like,
That's just inexperience. I mean, how many starts in right field did he get before?
I don't even think it's inexperience. I think it's energy. I think it's excitement.
Maybe. Oh, he just needs to – maybe they need to put a treadmill for him in the clubhouse so he can run out some of his energy before the
like,
game.
I was but like
– Between that and Altuve trying to truck him, man, Jake Myers needs to have his head on a swivel this season.
Yeah, they were talking about that in the post game. Altuve was like, "Yeah, I already had my mind made up." Jake's like, "Yeah, maybe I said it was a little too late." Like, it was nice of Jake to be nice in that moment.
Yeah,
because it'd be very clearly center fielder's ball, and very clearly Jake Myers was
definitely
calling for it. But, it was kind of funny. But, it was one of the best moments in Jose Altuve's life, though, yesterday when he went out to left field and the fans were cheering for him. Top three moment that he's ever had. Cam Smith, he is the most exciting Astro rookie since, you tell us, 713-780-3776. Who do you think it is?
I think for me, it's George Springer. I think George Springer... the dynastic run, like the core guys that came up to be a part of the championship team, I think George Springer, and maybe it's because he was their first round pick of that era, before Correa and Bregman and McCullers and all those guys. But I think Springer, when he finally came up after a couple years in the minors, I think that was the guy I was most excited for, because obviously, 11, 12, 13, they're losing 100 games, every year. And then finally he comes up in 2014. They win a few more games that year. I believe they won 70, maybe a little bit over 70. And you could see with the arrival of Springer that this process, the trust the process, intentionally sucking, intentionally tanking, like the process was there and starting to pay off with the promotion of George Springer. So I think for me, Cam Smith is the most exciting since Springer.
Okay, I have a different answer for you, but on the other side, we'll get the Hive's answers as well. 713-780-3776. Cam Smith, the most exciting Astros rookie since? You tell us. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees live from the Wild West Brewfest in Katy on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 in HD, 97.9, HD2.